All right.
Okay.
It's going. Thank you. Before we move or go on to this, I'm going to sit down in a minute, but right now I'd like everybody to stand up. Speaking of moving our bodies, we've been sitting for a while. So if you would all just join me in taking a nice deep breath, breathe into your belly through your nose. And very relaxed, breathe out. Let's try that again. Breathe in. Maybe this time when you breathe out, go, ah. Thank you. Please be seated. My name is Alice. And I am a compulsive overeater. And I'll give you a two-minute qualification for me, because I think I'm the newest of the speakers in this program. I came back to OA 2.5 years ago after about a 20-year relapse. I was desperate and I was determined. And this time I came back, got a sponsor, started working the steps, really threw myself into the program. I say I visited in the past. This time I really joined. And it's made a big difference in my life. The recovery that I've experienced, first of all, I have experienced about 65 pounds of physical recovery, and then a whole lot more of spiritual, mental, and emotional recovery. And this program is saving my life one day at a time. And so I was very happy when I joined this group, and Action Plan was the tool I knew the least about. So I figured, oh, I'm going to join this group to, you know, plan the workshop, and I'll learn some more. And I started to realize that the Action Plan has been part of my life in many ways, if not formally, and I'm going to share how that has worked in my meditation practice. The big book and the program doesn't give us a whole lot of literature on how to meditate. So I consider that kind of good news, because that means we can find the way that best works for us. And I'm going to share a few of the ways that I've learned about and have practiced meditation in my own experience. And I'm going to share a little bit about how I've incorporated the Action Plan in my meditation practice. The big book says, 12 and 12, one of the two says that the only mistake we can make in meditation is not to meditate. So that leaves us pretty wide open to try a lot of different things. I was first introduced to meditation in 1961. Now, I'm looking around at a group, and I think some of you weren't even alive in 1961. You would think I'd know what I'm doing, since I've known about it since 1961 and have practiced meditation in different ways at different times and intensities since that time. But I'm still learning. I am definitely still learning. They call it practicing meditation for a reason. But some of the things I learned are here on this little sheet that I put out in front of you. And the first I wanted to point out are the four P's: place, position or posture, perseverance, and that this is a process and a practice. Some people are lucky enough to have a whole room in their house where they can go meditate. That I envy those people, because that's not me. I have a very small house, but I do have a chair that is my meditation chair. And I don't only meditate in that chair, but when I meditate, most of the time, I meditate in that chair. And what it does for me, like most habits, when I'm ready to meditate and I sit in that chair, it's like my body and my mind know this is time to meditate. Now, you can meditate anywhere. You really can. I've done it, and I'm going to encourage you to try doing it in different places as well. But to start a habit of meditation, I would recommend having a special place where you do it. And maybe something to help remind you that this is your meditation place. Maybe have a candle or a little altar of some kind of pictures of something that's important to you. Maybe have a little ritual before you start. Mine is I just sit down, I light my candle, I breathe, I get the cat off my lap, and then I start, you know. A position is important as well. And I've read everything and heard everything from you have to absolutely sit in that lotus position no matter how it hurts, to it doesn't matter what position you have. And I can't do the lotus position. I have arthritis and I have bad hips, and I couldn't cross my legs like that unless they broke all my bones to make it happen. So what I do is simply sit in my chair, and the recommendation that I have read and heard the most is that try to make sure your spine is reasonably straight for the purpose of allowing your breath to flow freely. If you're hunched over like this, you can't breathe. And a lot of really good health from the meditation practice that people can do comes through the breathing. Breathing easily and freely and openly while you're trying to meditate, while you're practicing meditation. Perseverance. I think one of the best sentences I ever read in a book that was talking about this was, when you don't think you can sit another minute, stay there longer. Sit longer. When you don't think you could meditate for another day, try it again. People, when I talk to them about meditation, will say, I can't do that. My mind's all over the place. Well, you know what? Me too. My mind's all over the place. I have heard tapes of the woman that I consider like my guru for meditation talk about being filmed in her monastery with a number of people, and everyone saying, wow, look at that. They look so peaceful. That's so wonderful. And she said, if they only knew what was going on in our minds. And it's true. We all have monkey mind. We're all over the place. And I'm the same way. I will sit down, I will get started, and then I'll think, oh, did I turn off the oven? You know, or all right, I got to take the meat out for tomorrow night's dinner, tonight's dinner. You know, those things come to me, and the temptation is there to get up and go do that. And I have to make myself stay. No, I'm going to persevere. I'm going to sit here. I'm going to do this. Okay, so that's another thing that I've learned and I've heard over and over again. Stay with it. Stay with it. And also keep in mind, it's a practice. It's a process. It's not something that, even after 50-some years, I really know how to do. I'm still learning. I still stop when I shouldn't. I still don't persevere as long as I should. You know, I still fall asleep in the middle of it, which I tend to say, well, maybe that's higher power taking over for me. So it changes. It's like the program for me. This is a practice. This is a process, and it's progress, not perfection. You know, we keep trying. I keep trying to do this over and over again in my life, and I have seen later on that it does have results. It really does. It's probably about 10 or 15 years ago that I decided to really intensely get back into meditation. And so I had to set some goals for myself to succeed. And I can totally relate to the people who spoke before me about setting goals that I could reach. I'm one of those people, too, that it's either, you know, if I'm going to start at the top, I'm not going to be able to succeed at it. I'm going to go, F this, and I'm not going to do it anymore. So I had to set goals in the very beginning that were completely attainable for me. And the first was for me to start on the outside, to create an external stillness in my life. And so what I did was I turned off the radio in the car, I turned off the TV in the house. It's not on all day, radio's not on, my house is quiet. Except if we do sit down to watch TV, we sit down to watch TV. But I'm not one of those people who has the television going from the minute I get up until the minute I go to bed. I stopped watching the news. Maybe that's not a good thing, but I found it too externally disturbing to me. It would bother me, so I stopped watching. My husband decides to watch the news, I'll go somewhere else. And I also tried to find ways to make my life simpler, whatever that was going to be, and also to make it more quiet. Don't use the radio or any type of music at work, except on very rare occasions. If we do listen to music, it's usually something very quiet. Sometimes it's classical music or whatever makes us calmer. And then once I started getting accustomed to that, it took a while. Once I started getting accustomed to that, then I thought, okay, I'm going to try little spot meditations, which I still do. Stop at a stoplight, just breathe in. Breathe out. Calm me down. Because, you know, I'm at the longest stoplight in Fairfax County, and when is it going to change, you know? Instead of doing that on the way to work, I can sit there and say, okay, breathe in, breathe out. Same thing with in the grocery line. The lady in front of me has 74,000 coupons to hand in. It's like, You know, instead of that, it's breathe in, breathe out. Just be calm, just breathe, meditate. Touch base with higher power right now. Touch base with quiet. Make it quiet. And I was able to succeed at some of those goals because they were pretty simple. And I still do that. I still meditate at the stoplights. I still, you know, try to meditate in the grocery store. Doctor's office, another place where you're always waiting longer than you expect to be. It's a good place to just be still, just breathe, and pay attention to what's going on. Some other things I learned were different styles of meditation. When I was first introduced, I was introduced to what I call thinking or thoughts meditation, writing meditation. Reading something, writing about it. Reading something, thinking about it. It's a very valid way of meditating. I still do it. I still read from Voices of Recovery every morning and think about what's there. And sometimes read from the big book, read from other books, and just think about it. The thought meditation is a very valid way to meditate. Another meditation that I love is what I call mantra meditation, picking a word or a phrase, a prayer, a favorite prayer. You can take it from anywhere you want. It can be the one word Om. It can be something in a foreign language. It can be something in English. It can be a prayer you know, a prayer you're learning, a phrase, a word, and just breathe with it. Breathe in and then Om. I do that with my dog, believe it or not. When she's been running around the house and she's all wound up, I'll take her on my lap and I'll say, okay, Marley, Om. And she actually calms down. So it can work. You can find CDs and books with these phrases in them. And for the longest time, and I still have them in my car, CDs of meditation mantras that I'll listen to over and over that will help me while I'm driving. I do not recommend meditating while you're driving. However, I do recommend mantra meditation because you can think, you can have that in your head. It can calm you down. It can help you, you know, stay a little more peaceful while you're on these roads in Northern Virginia. Obviously, the more centered meditation is this breathing meditation where you concentrate on your breath. Now, for some people recommend counting. Some people tie that in with the mantra meditation. Some people just say, concentrate on your out-breath. Breathe in, breathe out. And actually, if you only concentrate on your out-breath, you'd be surprised. You still will breathe in. Your body will do that normally for you. And that's the meditation that I try to practice, that I work at practicing the most. Do I get distracted? Oh yeah, definitely. Everybody gets distracted. And I read a really beautiful thought just this morning in a meditation that when these distractions come, think of them like leaves on a river. They're just floating along, leaves on a river. Welcome them, let them go. Be gentle about it. Oh, okay, I forgot to turn off the oven. Okay, well, it's all right. Or did I turn off what? Or, boy, that person made me mad yesterday. Yeah, let it go, you know. And the one thing not to do, and I tend to fall into this sometimes too, is to just get, I must relax. You know, you can't. It's not going to work. Just, you know, oh, I'm distracted again. Oh, that's awful. I'm a terrible person. I can't. No, that's not the way to do it. Just breathe it in. Oh, okay. Distraction. Off you go. Concentrate on the out breath. And so those are things that I try myself. I work at practicing myself. And I know I'm not alone. The teachers who've taught me do the same things. There's beautiful ways to meditate with gestures and motion and just walking. You can take the iPod buds out of your ear and just walk in the silence. You can just listen to what's happening around you. You can feel the earth under your feet and be sensitive to what your body is, what part of your body is touching the ground. There's a wonderful Buddhist monk who does walking meditations just based on that. Feel your feet touching the ground. Feel the air on your body. That's very meditative. Dance, interpretive dance if you're a dancer, or just dance on your own. Just do what you want to do. Let your body experience itself and touch base with it. Yoga, Tai Chi, all of those are things that are very meditative practices that anyone can do in the way that they want to do it. I would strongly recommend trying to find a practice that works for you, that makes you feel good when you do it, and stay with it, and try a few. Do different things at different times, but let's not make that mistake of not doing anything at all, because we need it. Our program needs it. Our insides need it. Where we live in this culture, we need it. We are bombarded with stress and pressure and distractions all over us. We live in this culture now where you gotta have the cell phone with you, and you gotta tweet, and you gotta text, and you gotta email, and you gotta IM, and all of this. And we have to have this information instantly and act on it instantly. And I'm here to invite you to be a little countercultural and to let that go and to turn inward. I've just put 9 little tips for stealth meditations, little things you can do at different times. I'm not going to go through them now. My favorite is 9, to create little ways to remind yourself periodically during the day to touch base with your higher power. You know, when people first fall in love, whether it's with their other human being or their pet or their child, you have those loving looks. You just look and you go, oh. And those are the kinds of things I encourage you to do with the meditative moment, to touch base with your higher power, just that moment of loving look toward that higher power. Yesterday morning's reading in the Voices of Recovery spoke about sacred awe. And now I'm going to be touching about something that's very, very deeply personal to me. I truly believe that higher power dwells within each of us. I truly believe that deep, deep down inside me and inside each and every one of you and every sentient being on this planet is a radiance, an essential radiance, an essential wholeness and health and healing. If you want to call it God, your soul, whatever you want to call it, I believe it's there. And that's where the real me lives. And life and my family of origin and other baggage has created veils and walls and stuff on top of the real me. And when I experience that sacred awe, which happens to me sometimes in meditation, then that's when I'm touching that basic core radiance inside of me. I don't meditate to change me. I meditate to find me. I meditate to uncover all that stuff that's covering that sacred core inside of me. So in closing, I want to use this last phrase at the bottom of the ancient Sanskrit word that says, "The divine in me honors the divine in you." So thank you for letting me share, and namaste.